Welcome to the Sunday morning podcast from Kingdom Faith Church in Horsham. This message is by Roger Green.
I tell you what, it's such a relief coming in this morning and seeing people smile at me after last week. And thanks for coming back, because I thought that was, some difficult stuff that we talked about, didn't we? So thank you. And welcome everybody, and welcome everybody who's online, Crawley, Burgess Hill, Worthing, whether you're watching online or recorded, or anybody else who's on the stream, either recorded or live, welcome this morning. What we're going to be talking about is much more practical today. We talk this about kind of the sort of part two and developing a bereavement-friendly church and a bereavement-friendly society. We're going to touch a little bit again about the pain of grief, some interesting feedback that's come through from last week. We're going to talk about why we need to understand this stuff and change the culture. As Pastor Clive was talking about earlier, about this expression of love, how can we express our love to people in grief and bereavement? Because loss is everywhere. Death is everywhere. Yeah, and actually there's a quote from a guy, Timothy Keller, many of you will know him, book that he wrote called Death, about death. And he said, "We are probably the worst prepared generation in all of history to engage with the questions of death." Quite shocking in many ways, our culture. And this is not just a UK thing or a church thing. It's actually something about the culture of the first world, where medicine, developments in medicine, et cetera, have made us expect kind of breakthroughs, longer lives. You know, we get all this kind of cryotherapy stuff and people freezing their bodies and all the rest, yeah? Almost like we're worshipping the idea of eternal life on this earth. So something about why we need to understand this and actually start changing that culture, loving through being able to engage with others in grief. We're going to talk a bit about when others are grieving and get practical. We'll talk a little bit about resources, and then at the end, Pastor Clive and I will talk a bit about this thing that we call the bereavement-friendly church. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Good. Okay. So I'm going to give you, first of all, a quote. I want you to tell me where it comes from. It says, we can't plan how we're going to experience our grief. If you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans. Where's that in the Bible? Nowhere. It is that Old Testament prophet, Woody Allen. Anybody know him? Jewish philosopher, Woody Allen. If you're going to make God laugh, tell him your plans. And what I'd like to just show you is a little bit. One of the things I got fed back after last week, if we can show up that first slide, please, is like it's like a word cloud of grief. You won't be able to read it, but what you'll notice is the words are all sorts of ways round. It's like they're in a tumble dryer or a washing machine, because that's what it feels like when you're in grief, when you're in loss. It's not rational. We can't reason our way through it. It's emotional. It's an experience. This is in the intense period of grief. Reason does return, by the way. It does kind of re-enter the door at some stage. But you can see lots of words up there. I won't go through them all. But it's the pain. It's the suffering. It's the anxiety. It's the, you know, the fear, the powerlessness, the rage, the loneliness. All of those kind of things come through. And then I'd like to share with this next image, which is a lady who's part of the Ignite business and work network that we run, who's an artist. Her name is Beverly Samuel. And I describe her art as the art of the soul. And she painted this, and you can see it's in two parts. There's a division across the middle. It's called Grief Breaks Us. Broken in two. You can see the outline of a figure of a body there, but it almost looks as though it's been decapitated. Yeah? And then the blackness, the negativity of the thoughts that assault people during periods of grief. But around us, that gold, that is the presence of God. Now, why is this stuff important? Well, let's start with thinking about depression, for example. It's going to be cheerful today, isn't it? So, one in six, the Mental Health Foundation assesses that approximately one in six adults in any one week in the UK are experiencing a common mental health problem. The Office of National Statistics talked about in a survey in 2020, the first year of the pandemic, that children between the ages of 5 to 19, one in nine, was suffering a diagnosable mental health condition. Diagnosed, not just kind of them experiencing or acting it out, actually diagnosed. And studies tell us that women are more prone and more likely than men to experience depression. But the suicide rates are the opposite. Suicide rates average 6,000 suicides a year in the UK. 75% of attempts at suicide are women. 75% of fulfilled suicides are men. That's quite shocking. That's a high price to pay for not being able to deal and handle with these issues. And there are lots of things to watch for, particularly through bereavement, that can trigger depression, anxiety, social isolation, that can be, they don't have to be, but they can be triggers for suicide. There are things like complicated grief, where people are constantly in intense mourning. They get stuck in intense mourning. And we need to kind of understand this is the reality for so many people. Social isolation, losing a loved one, can lead to feelings of loneliness, social isolation, disconnection from support networks, disconnection from being loved, disconnection from being somebody in the world who's worth loving. Now, when other people are grieving, what's really important is the way, and one of the ways in which we can start to think about changing our culture, is think about the tone and the body language that we use when we're with them. I'll take you through in a few moments some of the things to say, some of the things not to say, some of the things to do, some of the things to avoid. So we're going to be quite practical. But let me give you an example. So if I say to you, well, as you know, you will have heard from my story last week, well, you know, my wife dying 4 years ago, I could say, well, what else have I got to lose? What else have I got to lose? Or I could say, oh, what else have I got to lose? Yeah? You spot the difference? Seven words, exactly the same. What was different? Tone and body language. Tone and body language. How we say what we say. When people are experiencing deep emotion, grief is all about deep emotion, they will sense your tone and your body language will be far more important to them than the words that you speak. And this is not just me inventing this stuff. There is good research behind it. Okay? So I've given you an example there of seven words, but what really mattered was the tone and the body language. David Kessler, I mentioned some of his work last week, says, the need is for someone to be fully present to the magnitude of their loss without trying to point out the silver lining. Just be fully present to the magnitude of somebody's loss. In some respects, this is really tough, but in other respects, it's quite simple. Just be fully present. Now, what does that mean? It means, well, not checking the time when they're talking to you. Not, you know, taking your mobile out. Oh, do you mind if I answer this call? All of those things that can tell somebody else that actually you are not fully present for them, that you're distracted, that something else is more important at that moment. What they need at that time is them, your presence, and for them to be the most important thing, the most important person in the room. So we talk about helping them to feel safe. Help people feel safe. Help people feel seen. Help people feel heard. Affirm them in what they're feeling. We talked a little bit last week about some of the emotions that get engendered in grief. Things like anger, shame. You might say to somebody, you can see they're feeling angry. You might say to them, you know, it's okay to feel angry. At this time, it's okay to feel angry. Don't say to them, he shouldn't be feeling angry. That's the last thing they need to hear. But what you need to encourage them to do, and that might be later down the track, is don't become angry. Don't become the angry man. It's okay to be angry. It's okay to feel what you're feeling. Just don't become it. But you might not say that in the moment. But there's that thing about affirming how they're feeling in the moment. Very important to recognize everyone grieves in their own way. Our grieving is like our fingerprint. You cannot compare two people in the way that they grieve. Just don't go there. When you've seen one person in grief, you've seen one person in grief. They could be very different expressions of grief. In my family, I grieved in a completely different way to the way my daughters grieved. They grieved in very different ways to each other. Empathy trumps sympathy every time. Be present. Empathy trumps sympathy. But how do you do that if you haven't experienced deep grief yourself? How can you be fully present in somebody's grief if you have not experienced it? And I use an analogy, which is about, imagine that you woken up in the morning and you look around you and the windows have disappeared from your house and the doors have disappeared from your house. Somebody's taken them away in the night without your consent. How do you feel? How would you feel? You'd feel shocked. What else would you feel? Unsafe. Vulnerable, violated, you would feel all of those things. Well, just imagine that. That's how somebody in deep grief feels. So you can't get to them through reason. You get to them through joining their feeling, validating how they're feeling. And what we're going to do quickly now is just look at some of the things to say and what to avoid saying. If we can have the next image up, please. Just imagine you're talking to this young woman, broken. Her life kind of just feels completely fragmented. Imagine you're speaking to her. What are the things that you, we'll start with what to avoid saying. You might say, well, this is what to avoid. At least they lived a long life. Lots of people die young. You know, she might be grieving her mother or her grandmother. Oh, she's in a better place now. Just don't. Don't say that. She brought this on herself. Yeah? There's a reason for everything. Aren't you over it yet? Oh, I'll tell you what, somebody asked me that. In my Christian life, I don't punch them in the face, but I really wish I could. Right? Or, you know, what about a stillbirth? Well, you can still have another child. You're still young. No. I know how you feel. No, you don't. No, you don't. You might have been through something similar, but you don't. Be strong. No, I'm feeling vulnerable. I'm feeling really weak. Don't tell me to feel strong. How am I going to feel strong? And she was such a good person. God wanted her to be with him. Now, there is actually a thing, you blame Chris and Sylvia Reed for this. They taught me all about spiritual bypassing. Have you heard of spiritual bypassing? It is a thing. It's when we're encountering something and we just don't know what to do. So we say something that we think is nice and spiritual to comfort them. Just don't. Spiritual bypassing. God only takes the best. Spiritual bypassing. Oh, I'll pray for you. Well, it's great to pray for them. That's lovely. But where I was blessed by people asking to pray was, how do you want me to pray? How do you want me to pray? Not praying on the basis of their assumptions. So there's some of the things not to do. But what are we able to do then? You can start by saying nothing. Just your presence can be enough. Your simple presence can be enough. Give them a hug instead of saying something. Touch them instead of saying something. Make them feel seen. Make them feel they are there. But you can say, I'm just so sorry for your loss. I wish I had the right words. I don't, just please know I care. I don't know how you feel, but I'm here to help in any way if I can. You've probably got lots of questions going on at the moment. Is there anything I can help with? You and your loved one, they will be in my thoughts and prayers. Or my favorite, one of the things that most touched me when after Vicky died was somebody coming up to me, and she it was about a year afterwards, and she started tearing up. We hadn't seen each other for quite a long time. And then she started talking to me about how much Vicky meant to them as a family. And she came back and was, I'm so sorry, I've opened up the subject again, I must have really upset you. Actually, I had to say, no, you didn't. You really blessed me because you talked to me about how much Vicky meant to you and your family. So something about, I miss them too. My favorite memory was, I'm only a phone call away. I'm here for you. Okay? Next slide, please. If we can think about people in, the pain of grief. Here's a guy, tough guy, in his military fatigues. We think they're kind of trained to go through this, don't we? Withstand it all. No, they're not. They're people. They're people. And actually, quite often, something that we found through the bereavement journey is ex-military are some of the most vulnerable. And some of the most vulnerable people often in society who will endure homelessness, etc. But the pain of grief is enormous. The worst approach you can have is people who cross the road. Never cross the road. Offering advice without it being requested. I'd say about the thing about, don't cross the road. I'm pointing at myself as well, by the way. When it's just too hard to have that conversation. A friend of mine in Stenning, where I live, she recently lost her husband. And she talked to me about, even this before the funeral, that's right, there was several things. There was one, she was standing outside one of the shops. She saw people looking at her on the other side of the road. They were clearly talking about her, but they didn't cross the road and talk to her. She also had people going, oh, you're young, you'll find somebody else. That was even before the funeral. You know, how callous is that? It's well-intentioned, but callous. People who offer advice without being requested, people who process their own grief when they're trying to help. And that's something to be really to be careful about, processing our own grief, bringing our own grief up when we're trying to help others. Trying to fix people. Don't try and fix them. Just be present for them. Don't be directive. Don't try and rationalize or explain loss. Do not seem judgmental. Don't try and minimize the loss. Don't put a timeline on loss. It's very different for different people. The best approach is being supportive, not trying to fix people. Ask about someone's feelings and acknowledge their legitimacy. Don't tell anyone what to do. Admit you can't make it better, but you can be there. Don't be time limited. One of the things that does happen is people withdraw their support after funerals. They'll be in touch, you know, during that immediately after a bereavement, after a loss, but then kind of withdraw the support. Don't. Just be there. Be constant. Be available. That's how to love people through this stuff. One of the other things I think is about engaging in rituals and remembering the anniversaries. Remember Woody Allen? Well, his Irish cousin, Dave Allen, he said, the terrible thing about dying over in Ireland is you miss your own wake. It's the best day of your life. You've paid for everything, and you can't join in. Mind you, if you did, you'd be drinking on your own. And we need to see beyond the grief. Those who find meaning tend to have a much easier time grieving than those who don't. Again, that's, have we got that quote from Kessler? Yeah, that one. Those who find meaning tend to have a much easier time grieving than those who don't. David Kessler from one of the world's international experts on grieving. And some of you may have heard or read the work of Viktor Frankl. He wrote a book called Man's Search for Meaning. He went through one of the most inhumane experiences in concentration camps. He was a Jew. He went through four concentration camps in 3 years, starting in Auschwitz, not knowing from one day to the other whether he's going to be alive, from one day to the next. Can we have the next? So, and this is one of the things that Frankl says. The more you forge yourself the more one forges himself by giving himself over to a cause to serve or another person to love, the more human he is and the more he actualizes himself. So two things, a cause to serve, a person to love. Those two things, out of seeking meaning. If you've read that book, it is, you weep. But people to love, cause to serve, they give us meaning and help us kind of see beyond the grief. Now, I just want to mention before Pastor Clive comes up, just a few resources. There is a charity by the name of At a Loss that provides signposting support, practical support for people that you can find in any location, any part of the country. There is the bereavement journey. Pastor Clive has already mentioned that starts in the mornings on the 13th of May here, and in the afternoons, evenings rather, on the 14th of May in one of the homes locally. We'll talk in a moment about the Bereavement Friendly Church Charter. And of course, I can't go by without mentioning this, of course, can I? In the resources, again, the book Dancing When the Lights Go Out, and we've got it's up there, isn't it? The next one. So you can, go back one, please, Rob. There you go. If you buy an additional copy on Amazon as well, please, post a review and give it away. I repeat from last week, this is not about selling books. It's about the message. This is about getting through the culture change, helping to love people in their pain. And we bundle that up with this one, which is a book I wrote a few years ago called How on Earth Did That Happen?, which is all about the workplace and business and spirituality. So I'm going to pause at that moment, and Pastor Clyde's going to come up and join me, and we're going to have a chat, aren't we, about the bereavement-friendly church.
Yeah, thanks so much, Roger. I know it's not an easy subject to cover, is it?
I didn't notice.
We're all about life, but we're also talking about death. But it's the reality, isn't it, of life.
Yeah.
And people are facing, like you say, loss, grief. And you've been talking a lot about culture, having a culture that helps to love people that are going through loss and grieving. So can you just describe, you know, what is a bereavement-friendly church then? What are some of the characteristics of that?
Yeah, thank you. So you might hear a bit more about this over the coming weeks and months, but the At a Loss, who run the bereavement journey, they have also launched this thing that's called the Bereavement-Friendly Church Charter and the Marks of a Bereavement-Friendly Church. And here in the Horsham congregation, we've signed up to kind of pursuing that. And actually what's happening today is one of those first kind of steps, which is almost training. So today has been a bit about kind of educating in how to handle grief. So bereavement awareness training is something. Getting an understanding right across the church about how to encounter people who are experienced loss. Of course, those grievous things, I think I mentioned it last week, our focus has been about bereavement, but it could be divorce. It could be redundancy. It could be anything in people's lives that right. creates a grievous loss.
Yeah.
That we can engage with a conversation, not just kind of ignore it. And I know that's been a journey for me, you know, encountering, you know, friends, for example, who've been divorced. I have not known how to talk to them about that.
Yeah.
Historically, I wouldn't have known how to do that. I can do that now. Because I understand a bit more. I've not been through that myself, but I can understand the grief that goes through that. In fact, it was one of my friends who'd been twice divorced. He was the first one who actually said to me, Roger, you must be grieving, when Vicky was still alive. And I was like, how would you know? And then he described that process for himself. So rather than sweeping these things under the carpet, I describe it as my grief radar has gone to a different frequency.
Right.
I can start to have a conversation with people about their loss, and it's extraordinary the things that come out in that.
It's interesting, some of the things to do and not to do, to say and not to say. I think often as Christians, often we know an answer.
Yeah.
Or we know what the Bible says. But it's interesting, Jesus said himself, I only speak the words my Father gives me. But then he says, and this is often what we miss, and how to say them.
Yes.
And it's that little bit at the end of that verse, you know. That's obviously really important, isn't it? It's not just knowing, oh, I could say this, but it's actually what is the right thing to say now and how to say it.
Yeah.
So this whole thing about loving people is not about, like you say, fixing them or... You know, so can you just say a little bit more just about how do we love people well when they're in the midst of that kind of grief and loss? Like you say, it could be lots of different things in life.
I think it's that staying present. That's the first thing. And I think I said earlier, it sounds dead easy. It's actually quite hard to do.
Yeah.
Just being that faithful friend. Being someone who's there, prepared to have a conversation, but also, and this happened to me, got lots of messages and say, I'm here for you if you want to talk. I didn't always want to talk to people, actually. Mm. And just, but the fact that I didn't want to talk to somebody, don't move away from me, please. Just keep giving me the messages, because I really appreciate them. Whereas there were some people I could talk to and I could open up to. But, you know, I couldn't string a sentence together without breaking down in the first few months after Vicky had died. I just couldn't.
Right.
In fact, for some, I couldn't even string a sentence together on a text without weeping. Mm. But that was part of the normal part of the process. Now, I mentioned earlier about, you know, it's like don't judge a book according to the cover. People might have seen me weeping, but I was broken, but I wasn't. How can I describe it?
You were falling apart.
I wasn't, exactly. I wasn't falling apart. Mm. I wasn't falling apart. It's part of the way I processed it. Mm. So the fact that we might not see somebody present, that, you know, we might not see them in church, say, for a month, or 2 months, 3 months, but we know they've experienced something, just send them a text. They'll come back at the point that they feel able to engage.
Mm. I've got loads of questions, but obviously time's a bit of a challenge. So can you just, you this has just happened. You weren't looking for it, were you? But you've got a new job.
Yeah.
Yes. Can you just explain what that is? Because you've talked about bereavement-friendly churches, but you've also talked about a culture or communities. So can you just explain what God's leading you into and how does that link with what... with us as a church, and what that means for Horsham and whatnot.
Yeah, so just over a month ago, completely out of the blue, I wasn't looking for a job, but at a loss, the charity who run the Bereavement Journey course, the chief executive sent me an email saying, "Hi, Roger," which you always want, oh, yeah. We've just created this new job called Head of Engagement for Bereavement-Friendly Communities across the UK. Are you interested? I responded by saying, well, the job spec says you've got to be ordained, you've got to be theologically qualified. Emailed her back. She says, don't matter.
Yeah.
So I go and have a conversation with her like that for 3 hours non-stop without talking about the job. And it was like, I mean, if you've read the book, I set out the objectives of the book. It's kind of in this job spec, the aims and objectives are identical. And it's like, oh, duh. You know, obvious, isn't it? I started last Wednesday.
Brilliant. So can you just explain a little bit, what that role, because it's more than just church-centred and role in that sense.
Yes. So the bereavement journey and the signposting stuff I mentioned earlier for at a loss, that's really for people who are going through the loss, experiencing grief, where to get help from. And the next level, if you like, is the bereavement-friendly church, which is really about being a church that will welcome non-judgmental everybody and anybody in their pain, and help them through that, love them through that, help them into, you know, a real freedom. But the bereavement-friendly communities is really at the heart of society.
Right.
And that's about partnering, encouraging churches to partner with local authorities, with the NHS, with other charities, with commerce, with industry, with the armed forces, with prisons. So we're going to be going into prisons, for example, and developing a course that is specific for prisons. Because you imagine there, somebody loses somebody, you know, a bereavement in a prison for a relative. They might get out for a day to attend the funeral, but what about processing the bereavement? So it's getting into those sort of areas and being a central part of our society.
Yeah.
Does that help?
That's great. I think also the church is central to that change in what's going on in society. Yeah. How do we see ourselves as a church?
Absolutely.
I mean? Do we see ourselves on the peripheral of things, or do we see actually, can we be part of change for a community because of what God's doing in us and then wants to do through us to meet people where they are for then God to get a hold of them in that sense?
That's right. It's that, it's the mission call. You know, remember kind of Jesus talked to us or talked about being a light on a hill, the city on a hill that can't be hidden. Well, a city on a hill, a light on a hill, they don't speak. They just are. So it's the presence. It's that dynamic, that sense of love, of not judgment. No judgment in this. We just want to love you.
and taking our place in society as well as kind of ministering to people or helping and supporting people individually. And we're called to be salt and light. Again, salt and light don't speak, do they? They preserve. They are, you know, something that gives taste. So that for me is really one of the real sense of mission. If we're called to love as believers, then let's love in our society wherever people are and help change that culture and that community. Those statistics I gave you earlier on around mental health, well, you know, look around this room, the number of people in this room, look in your neighborhoods. They are true. 1 in 6 in any 1 week in the UK of adults experiencing depression, experiencing anxiety. How can we be with them? 1 in 9 children experiencing anxiety. How can we be with them? Yeah.
Just finally, one of the things over the last few years, as the whole bereavement journey has been developing, and you've obviously been very much at the heart of that, I realised myself about who we are as a church. We didn't do this well, and in that, and something, just things that you've had feedback this week yourself, I think reiterates this, that as a church, if we've not. I don't want to say done bereavement well, in that, just as it sounds like quite a cold phrase, isn't it? But if we've not been good at helping people through grief and loss, often that means that people go unheard or unlistened to, or think they don't matter, or they're just left on their own and isolated. And so I personally want to say, if there is anybody here and you've been through, or you might still be in the process of working through grief or loss in different ways, and you felt like, for whatever reason, especially before the last couple of years or so, we've been trying to get a handle on this, if you felt unlistened to, unnoticed, or, wow, they just didn't get a grip there, did they? They totally missed that as a, you know, in terms of, then I want to say sorry, and I want to apologise to anybody if you've been going through this and you've felt unsupported, unheard, or unnoticed in that sense. You think, I'm still here, but the church did a pretty rubbish job of doing that. And this is one of the areas that we really want to see change and improve. And one area for us as a body, but also for the many people that you know, that I know, and that beyond our own relationships, that are going to need this kind of body, family, community to be connected into. So please would you forgive me, us as a leadership, if that has affected you in any way. And obviously we want to, through what Roger's been doing and what we believe as a leadership, we need to really see change and improve in terms of how we love one another in the context of loss and grief. And so with that, I think, obviously, time permitting, we want to just open the time up now as we kind of close this morning. That if anybody does want to chat to anybody about anything over the last couple of weeks, or you want somebody to pray with you, and it might not we're not saying they're going to, you know, come and be prayed for and they're going to fix you in that sense, but come and share. I want to just pray with somebody. I want to process some things. If you want to take some time to do that, then we're going to be available. And people that have been in the Freedom Prayer Team, okay, if any of you guys are here, if you could make yourselves available as well. And then we're just going to have a time where we just give people space to respond. So is there anything else you want to add at all, Roger?
No, thank you. I think that's so important. I mean, it really echoes some of the feedback that I've had over the last few weeks. One particular piece of feedback, a lady not in this church, elsewhere, wrote to me and said, thank you on behalf of all those in the churches across this country who have not had their pain or their grief acknowledged and not been listened to. So It's thank you for that on behalf of this congregation and on behalf of Kingdom Faith. But I think us understanding that actually that is part of what God is doing here and needs to do if we're to be a church that matters and brings that love. Mm. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this Kingdom Faith podcast. We trust it's been an encouragement to you. For more information and resources from Kingdom Faith and our other audio and video podcasts, please visit www.kingdomfaith.com.